Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Hello and welcome to Witch Bitches Review. I am the familiar smell of sandalwood wafting through your attic. If you start to smell my sister, burnt toast, call 911. Phoenix Arcana Lightwood.
And I am Andy's ugly Friday the 13th shoes, because I may be old and worn out, but I still enjoy having a man's feet all over my tongue. I'm Siren Rex Fry. This is the podcast where two actual witches analyze and review representations of witchcraft in media and pop culture.
Today we are discussing Charmed Season 1, Episode 13, From Fear to Eternity.
The title is a play on the 1951 novel and subsequent 1953 film From Here to Eternity, which is a period war drama romance that takes place just before the bombing of Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. What I've read of the plot seems to have absolutely nothing to do with this episode, except for one interesting thing. One of the protagonists of the novel and film goes by his last name Pruitt, but has it shortened to Prue, which is, of course, the same name as one of our lead witches in Charmed.
According to IMDb, this episode rated 8.3 out of 10 and is the one where every 1,300 years, a unique demon appears that feeds on the fears of witches. This time, it is targeting the Hallowell sisters, and they have received aid from their Wicca ancestors, just as they are close to their own fearful deaths. This episode was written by Tony Blake and Paul Jackson, and directed by Les Sheldon.
That's really the description, though. They're Wicca ancestors.
Yeah, they're Wicca ancestors. Really? And actually, I read the entry that Prue finds in the Book of Shadows, and it says something about Wicca powers. So they're just all about using Wicca wrong on this show.
That's true. Wicca is not an adjective.
Mm-mm,
at nope. all. First of all, additionally, there's so many things wrong with this. It's not so much their ancestors as their dead mom.
Right.
Like, their ancestors actually have nothing to do with this at all.
You know, those problems aside, I really love this episode. I think it's a real standout in season one, like, in the best possible way. There are a handful of really iconic moments, and I'm honestly surprised at the amount of Phoebe and Prue scenes we get. Piper's kind of doing her own thing in this one, and I think that's the first time we've seen that from her. Overall, I think the episode's, like, super solid, but there are a couple of missteps for me, but I still really enjoyed this one, for sure.
I like this episode for a lot of reasons. Billy Drago is hilarious as Barbas, and I kind of never get tired of his appearances throughout the show. Totes agree about iconic moments. However, this is the first episode to introduce other witches into the Charmed universe, and I think it really does a disservice mm-hmm. to them, which is a trend that we will continue to see happening. Additionally, the Charmed ones are kind of snooty about the other witches they meet, which is bonkers considering all the other witches seem to be much more well-informed about what's going on than they are.
True. Should we get into the scene by scene?
Let's do it, friend. This episode opens with Phoebe and Prue shopping in an occult bookstore called Coven of Books, which is totally a place that I would frequent, just by the business name alone. Mm-hmm. They're apparently there to pick up an order Piper has placed, but Phoebe is searching for a good luck charm for her job interview.
I like this scene for a lot of different reasons. First and foremost, because they are actually using the term charm correctly for the first time in this show.
Which language believe?
Fantasy shows in general have this really bad habit of needlessly using actual terms incorrectly when there's another term that actually means what they want to say.
That's true.
This time, they are referring to a charm as an object, which is more or less accurate. Also, this scene just feels very authentic to me. I don't know what occult shop is open until 1 a.m., but I would like to go to there.
I guarantee if there was an occult store open at 1 a.m., I would be mm-hmm. there at 1 a.m. For sure. Well, okay, maybe 10 years ago. Actually, at 1 a.m. now, I've typically been in bed for 6 hours, but... you know, back in my 20s, for sure.
I mean, it's just, that seems so much more reasonable than, like, 7:30, you know? This is also the first time we ever see the sisters going to an occult shop, and I think that's really cool and fun. The shopkeeper kind of gives me the same vibe as the shopkeeper from Love Witch. Like, hi, Elaine, bright blessings. Like,
The shopkeeper, whose name is Tangela, which I also love because it's so fucking weird and also so close to the name of one of my favorite Pokemon who has the same hair as me, tells them to hurry the fuck up so she can close her store. And she kind of info dumps the reason that she wants to close is because it's the eve of Friday the 13th, and every 1300 years there is a culmination of real bad juju on Friday the 13th, and she ain't ready.
There's a really heavy focus on Friday the 13th in this episode and the superstitions surrounding it. So it's kind of early in the episode to segue into a segment. But I think now's as good a time as any to talk about the superstitious aspects of Friday the 13th. So let's play that jingle and mingle with some big, hard misconceptions.
Wrong. It's time for You Must Be Myth Taken. This is the part of the show where we call out the wild inaccuracies and misrepresented figures, features, and creatures in mythology.
So in doing research for this segment, we came to realize that there's no concrete origin to the superstitions of Friday the 13th. There are two different religious myths pertaining to the day that I saw repeated over and over in my research. However, the only date that seems to have significance is the arrest and eventual execution of many members of the Knights Templar by King Philip IV in an attempt to obtain their wealth on Friday, October 13th, 1307, after which it was regarded as an evil, unlucky day by members of that order.
So just to clarify that, if we're talking witches who are afraid of Friday the 13th today, it's because we're apparently worried about some misfortune that befell a religious military order. Come on. It was probably for the most.
Another possible origin of the superstition is in reference to the number of guests at the Last Supper, the eve before the crucifixion of Jesus in Christian mythology. Subsequently, this has led to another superstition that having 13 guests is a dinner party, is an omen of death, and so on and so forth.
So this one is also just like especially bonkers to me, because like imagine if like every time something bad happened, you calculate the number of guests at the dinner table before that happened, and then you're like, that's an unlucky number.
Like, yeah.
That's a bit much. I mean, I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that by that formula, every number is an unlucky number. But again, we're back in like talking like Christian mythology here in both of these cases. So like, I mean, the number 13 didn't really have anything to do with Jesus being crucified so much as the fact that like he was starting an upstart cult in like an empire that had like a lot of like political problems going on, and he turned into a scapegoat. You know, that had more to do with it than, like, how many friends he had over the night before.
In Norse mythology, there's a reference again to the amount of guests at a dinner party in which Loki crashed a dinner party of the gods, becoming the 13th guest, and arranged to have Baldur, the god of joy and gladness, killed, sending Earth into darkness and mourning. The day of the week, now called Friday, was originally named after the goddess Frigga, who was later confused for Freya, and in turn it became her day.
Total tangent, but there is definitely a lot of confusion between Frigga and Freya for sure, and it's actually possible that they sort of are the same goddess, or they were the same goddess and split in two. That's really irrelevant. But the reason we call Friday Friday is because it was originally Frigga's day and was shortened to Friday. And you can also think of it as Freya's day, and you're not super off in your mythology either way.
Yeah, later when Christianity overtook the Norse pantheon, Freya was said to have been banished as a witch, causing Friday to be known as the Witches' Sabbath. And it was speculated on Fridays, 12 witches would gather with the devil and be naughty and do bad things like smoke crack and murder infants.
Oh, so devil makes 13 at this satanic dinner party, orgy, whatever. It's important to remember that most of the theories we've presented to you are nothing more than hearsay and speculation, some of which have been perpetuated by meme culture that has very little interest in citing sources. So while there may be kernels of truth to all of this, I wouldn't treat any of it as absolute fact, and I would not go about presenting it as concrete evidence.
Right.
Friday the 13th is just kind of one of those amalgamations of several different things that has power through repetition, even though nobody really knows where it got started.
Yeah, overall, it's all speculation, and the origins are seemingly to be all based in like folklore and traditions and social norms, but I'm perhaps like most of all pop culture. You know, when I think of Friday the 13th, I think of this episode of Charmed, but most people would think of the popular horror film franchise. And I think those films are perhaps the most recent and like greatest contributor to the idea that this day is evil and unlucky.
Oh, for sure. I mean, a popular film franchise where a bunch of people get murdered on Friday the 13th probably has affected cultural consciousness of thinking of it as some kind of special day. But I think this episode of Charmed definitely also played its
part. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Despite the studies, the actual phobia of the day and the low travel rates on Friday the 13th, there's really no substantial evidence to support that it's any more or less lucky than any other day.
Since I've been like running my witchy meme pages for the past 2 years now and getting involved in a lot of other witchy meme pages, I've witnessed something of an internet movement to claim Friday the 13th as a lucky day for witches, as an actual like witches Sabbath. And while I'm not super invested in that, I do like the idea a lot more than the idea of being afraid of it. My take on Friday the 13th is that, insert sociology rant, time, like most things, is a social construct. The days of the week and the dates of the month are all things created by humans to organize time, to make it easier for us to navigate and plan and record. But the fact that it may be Friday the 13th tells you nothing about the actual state of the Earth or its position in the cosmos, or your surroundings, or what's gonna happen to you soon. You know, there's no natural property that any given Friday the 13th has in common with any other Friday the 13th. The power given to this day is entirely created by humans and their beliefs, and therefore we also have the power to believe that it is an ordinary day, or even make it a lucky day if we so choose, simply by believing it.
That's actually referenced in the episode. Prue says bad things happen on this day because people put energy into believing things are going to happen on this day.
And I think that she is correct. And later into this episode of our podcast, we're actually going to talk about that exact same thing happening.
Now back to your regularly scheduled programming.
Tangella hands Prue and Phoebe a flyer for a Wicca gathering, and they're like, why the fuck would we want to go to that? And Tangella's like, because you're witches, duh. And Prue and Phoebe act somehow surprised that this witch store proprietor knows that they are witches. Kind of obvious, you guys. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's just that this is a witch store and you shop here often enough that I know you guys by names, and you're shopping here right now for magical objects, and I just sort of assumed by that overwhelming evidence that you guys were witches, but sorry, I didn't mean to freak you out. I didn't mean to crack your shell, little witch egg. Like, go back in the broom closet. It's fine. I didn't see anything.
Also, she says that the total is $25.50. Is that with Piper's order? Or just for that rink-a-dink coin Phoebe is buying? Because that is far too expensive.
I don't know. I have a feeling that you could probably get away with charging $25 for a rinky-dink coin in a San Francisco occult shop that stays open until 1 in the morning. I mean, Tangella has bills to pay.
I mean, I get it, sis, but I am a witch on a budget, okay? I am a Dollar Tree witchy hall video bitch, okay? Like,
yeah, we don't all have, like, older sisters with jobs to use their credit cards. Come on. The clock strikes not 12, but 13 times. And Tangella is like, bitch. Anyway, can you guys pay me and get the fuck out, please? Tangella is genuinely afraid of this day, which apparently Phoenix finds surprising considering she's a witch, but I don't find surprising because she is a, like, one-scene witch written by muggles.
I mean, yeah. That's fair. As soon as Prue and Phoebe leave, a demon with some serious gingivitis rises up out of a manhole. Relatable. and of course, we know him as Barbus later in the series. Tangella picks up a rock when she probably should have handed him a toothbrush. All the while, he's using her fear of earthquakes to paralyze and kill her. So it seems as though there's an actual earthquake happening in this scene. But later in the series, his powers are, like, more illusion-based. So I feel like that kind of creates, like, a continuity issue.
A little bit. It's sort of unclear because he kind of, like, makes illusions and real things happen, and it kind of goes back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they ever nail it down that it's one or the other. So I guess you could just say that, again, Barbas is, like, super powerful and really has no excuse for not winning, just like every other demon in this season.
I mean, honestly. So after Tangela dies, with much fanfare, we get the opening credits.
Before we move on, I just want to sum up my feelings about Tangela, because it ties into how I feel about the representation of witches who aren't the charmed ones in this whole show. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So most of the time we meet other witches in the show, they're going to die. And in this episode, they're going to die in the same scene they're introduced in. Okay. So Tangela is like a witch store owner. She's a business owner. She's a pillar of the witch community. Okay. And she's got information about mythology, and she knows what's coming on this unlucky day. The sisters totally, like, shun her and treat her like she's ridiculous.
Yeah.
For her fears. They kind of, like, make fun of her and give her, like, side eye a lot. And they're like, this bitch is woo-woo. And then when she, like, tries to create some kind of camaraderie with them by inviting them to the Wicca gathering, they're, like, super snooty about it. And they're like, don't fucking talk to us. We're not witches. What do you mean?
Yeah. There's, like, the charmed ones have such this air of elitism about them.
They so do. And then finally, after all of this insult, we get our injury, which is she dies, even though she was totally prepared. Well, not totally prepared, I guess, but she totally saw this coming. But still, she dies because she gets to be the first victim right after midnight.
Yeah, it's just, it's so ridiculous the way that this plays out for, I mean, all of the witch practitioners, according to the lingo of the show.
The witch practitioners. Fuck you.
The way that fucking plays out for them in the show, it's bullshit. It really, really is. They take these characters really that could have, like, immense potential and just throw them away. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So, Siren, you did a lot of research on the song that plays after the opening credits this time. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
I do. This is so weird, and I did not mean to get as into this, but I was literally just like, okay, this song is kind of neat, and it references the episode a little bit, so I was like, what is this song? You know, because I've never heard it before or again. It turns out, okay, so the song that plays at the beginning of this episode is called I've Seen the Signs. It was composed by Wade Hubbard and sang by Dana Glover. Now, Wade Hubbard is a composer who does movie soundtracks, and Dana Glover was an early 2000s pop singer who only released one album. The song that they do in this episode is only 1 minute long and does not exist literally anywhere else. It was never released on an album. It never appears in any other show. The lyrics are just a little bit specific to the episode. Like, it references, like, signs and superstitions and the number 13 and stuff like that. So, while I cannot find any definitive proof of this claim, like nobody else has written it down before me, I have no choice but to believe that this song was written exclusively to appear in this episode by two people who were just starting their careers. And considering that this is a pilot season, it just seems so weird to me that they were like, hey, 13th episode, let's commission a song and not make any fanfare about it at all.
That's fascinating to me. And I was like, I found myself like dancing along to it watching the episode. It's like it's a good song.
I do like it.
Yeah. It's fun. I'm sad that there's not like an extended version anywhere.
And there's not. So everything that you hear in the episode is the whole song.
Wow.
There's no like 90s fade out and two more minutes afterward. Like, no, they play the whole song in the episode and that's it. That's all there is.
Well, in the manor the next day, while this completely original song is playing, Piper goes through the supplies that she ordered and made her sisters go get for her, which all have, like, crosses on them. That's
weird.
That's pretty Christian, Pipes.
You know, she does, like, totally care what the church thinks of her right now, though.
I mean, yeah, I guess so. Phoebe looks, like, fucking awesome in her, like, business formal blazer that she stole from her sister. Where's that fashion editor job now, Phoebes? They discuss Prue's intimacy issues until Prue comes in and tells them about like a foreshadowy dream she had about their mom.
There's this line in here that's like equally funny and stupid. So Phoebe's like, I wish I had a dream about mom. And Piper's like, mom would have to knock before she comes into your dream.
Implying that the youngest sister, the slutty sister, has sex dreams all the time.
Phoebe's the dirtiest slut. But like, you don't have sex dreams, Piper? Okay, sure.
Honestly, she whatever. Can freeze the handyman several times during sex, but she can't have a sex dream. But Piper is like totally freaking out about bad luck and is for some reason having a superstition-themed fundraiser. Like, it's not a very clear ploy just to set the tone of the episode and make stupid jokes. Like,
the reason behind it is not fleshed out, but I do sort of thematically enjoy it.
Yeah. Here. I mean,
I do.
It definitely fits the theme, but it's so like blatantly obvious that they were like, oh, well, let's just put superstitions everywhere in this episode.
And I would also totally go to a superstition-themed party.
Me too.
In case anybody wants to throw one and invite me. I will totally tie crepe paper around a ladder for you.
Creepy paper.
So Andy shows up to tell Prue about some sensitive information regarding a case that's actually in his jurisdiction for once, because someone was murdered, even though it doesn't really look like a murder at all.
At least somebody died this time.
Yeah, but at least someone's dead. Because, of course, you know, he finds out that the last credit card run at the store was Prue's, which means that he actually did some digging for once. Some actual detective work.
He did a real investigation, actually.
Good job, Andy. I'm surprised you just didn't get on the Google 3 days later. But he's like, don't be hanging out at witch stores, because first of all, that's fucking weird. And second of all, apparently you'll die.
It's so weird the amount of times he says women with ties to the occult in this episode when he was perfectly comfortable with the word witch in episode one.
Yeah, but if he says witch, then Daryl is going to be like, bro, you know I don't believe in that shit because I'm sensible. So Prue goes up to the Book of Shadows and she finds an entry about the Friday the 13th, 1300 years, negative energy, convergence, demon of fear, blah, blah, blah. It's in her mom's handwriting, but it's only really accurate information for this episode because then Barbas starts showing up whenever he feels like it and doing whatever he wants, but that's fine.
I don't know. Barbas is so... he's such a constant, but he's so inconsistent for the whole show.
I mean, they explain it, but like, they're just like, I'm so sick of doing Friday the 13th episodes. We just want Billy Drago to come back. So let's like make it happen.
At Quake, Prue gives Piper this temporarily accurate information about Barbas killing unmarried witches. And Piper and Phoebe have some random ass fears. But Piper stays at work all day while her sisters are in danger, probably as payback for their lack of concern for her becoming a werewolf last week.
Oh, good point. I wouldn't help those bitches either.
Right? It's like, oh, you guys are scared? Well, I was scared when I was turning into a fucking hairy beast.
For me, that's just Monday. But what is with the unmarried witches thing? It really bothers me. Like, why do they have to be unmarried witches? We're basically talking virgin sacrifice. Like, that's the euphemism for that. And, like, why? Like, what is the point of that? Just, like, more purity sex negative crap. Like, who cares?
It doesn't have a point. They were like, oh, but we've had our characters have sex too often, so let's make them all virginal.
Well, yeah, obviously they're not virgins.
Oh, right?
Nobody's buying that.
Additionally, this scene sets up Prue's fear of drowning, which actually makes sense, and is referenced more in the future.
So, okay, so Phoebe's greatest fear is losing a sister, and that also gets referenced repeatedly, but they don't really even talk about Piper's greatest fear here. I don't think we have an answer.
Her fear of flying.
I know, but she's like, well, it's not really that deep. And then, you know, later in the season she flies and it's no big deal. So I don't think it is that deep.
Yeah, I don't think... Here's the thing about Charmed is, like, a lot of the, like, personality traits of the sisters are not, like, forward thoughts. They're, like, episodic plot devices.
Exactly.
This is the first example of that happening, in my opinion, and I think it's going to continue to happen for the rest of the show. In fact, I know it's going to happen for the rest of the show, and I'm going to talk about it every single time because I hate it.
Well, no, if you consider how this episode goes, it sort of seems like Piper's greatest fear is Friday the 13th. And since it's Friday the 13th all day long, it doesn't really make sense that Barbas didn't just show up while she was in the bathroom and take care of it.
Honestly, I would say that, like, Piper's actually... perpetual fear is something bad happening at all times.
Yeah, just the next thing to happen ever is Piper's greatest fear.
She's like a homosexual. A slight inconvenience will ruin her whole fucking day.
Mood.
Right? But Prue takes off with this witch flyer from Tangella's store to warn all the other witches on it, even though they're not really witches.
But they are, but they're not witches like us, but they still might get killed for being witches. It's complicated, yeah. Don't ask.
I mean, even though they're not as good as we are, we still should probably save them.
Yeah, it's because they're not as good as we are that they're going to get killed.
Honestly.
Actually, that's what it is. Huh. Bummer. So Phoebe goes to this job interview and she gets it on the spot, and this whole situation is completely unrealistic.
Yeah.
So she just gets, like, hired immediately after the interview and, like, left to take care of the office by herself. Have you actually tried to get a job recently? Because it takes, like, 15 phone calls and, like, 3 interviews and a background check and, like, anyway, completely unrealistic.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It's not...
But they just... They really needed Phoebe to have this job for the episode, I guess, even though it really adds nothing.
It was just, like, immediate. Who does that? That's not a thing. That doesn't happen.
It's not a thing. So anyway, so her new boss, whose name I don't even remember. Like, Deborah, Nancy, Karen, white woman with bangs. I don't know. So anyway, so Hannah, or whatever her name is, asks Phoebe to lie to her husband about the affair that she's having, that she's going on to have right now. And Phoebe's like, you didn't even do a background check on me, and you're trusting me with your office keys and your personal secrets, but yeah, sure, let's do it. Additionally, in this scene, Phoebe asks her new boss if she's taking a quote-unquote romantic midweek break, even though we've clearly established that it's Friday and not the middle of the week. As I have said repeatedly through this podcast, Charmed has no concept of time.
Zero. Absolutely none. Phoebe's conflicted about her boss having an affair in this episode, which is pretty hypocritical, because if you think back to episode 4, Phoebe proved she was a real psychic to the hotel manager, who's clearly a homosexual, by having a premonition of him having an affair, which didn't seem to bother her at all when working
for... Total hypocrite.
For a man.
But now, yeah, that so it's when a woman has an affair that it's a problem, but if a man does it, it's fine, especially if he's gay and sleeping with 2 women. I don't know. San Francisco.
Honestly.
So finally about this, I do want to add that the real estate business that Phoebe is working at in this episode is called SWA Properties. And while they don't feature prominently anywhere else, SWA Properties is actually featured several times throughout the life of the series. Pretty much whenever real estate is involved, they will have that logo with that name on any, like, paperwork that you might just see briefly.
Oh, cool.
And in season 8, Phoebe rents her new apartment from this exact same company.
Cool. I didn't notice that, actually.
Yeah, so that's just a little thing they reuse over and over again that actually is kind of like a good world building as opposed to laziness, I think, in this case.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Charmed doesn't have a lot of instances of that, in my opinion, but that's a... It's a really good one to point out, because it's a great, like, continuity world building plot device there that they've employed, which...
But also, so that forces me to imagine an off-screen scene where Phoebe runs into Deborah, or whatever her name is, and is like, oh, do you remember 7 years ago when I did tell your husband you were having an affair? Well, I'd like to rent this apartment now.
We transition into the next scene where Barbas kills another witch with an unplaceable accent named Zoe. She's a black woman who gets one scene before she's horrifically killed. And Barbas basically calls her out for not being in control of her emotions and not knowing herself, which is one of the main goals of being a witch, right?
Yeah, so again, I'm pissed off at the representation of witches here. This witch... probably because she's black, of course, dies before the sisters even get to meet her.
Yeah.
I mean, she's alive on screen for probably about 60 seconds. And she seems to have everything under control. She's knows that Barbas is coming, and she doesn't think she's afraid. And then he's like, oh, well, you thought that, but you are, so now you get to die.
Yeah. It's just
awful. And, okay, so again, we're actually talking, and they don't focus on this enough, but we're talking about Barbas killing pillars of the community here. Okay, Tangela runs an occult store. Zoe organizes Wicca events. Like, these are two women who would be missed. These are two women holding the community together, and they barely get any screen time, and they just get killed horribly, and then we're over them forever. That's problematic for me.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like I said, they take these characters that have so much potential and could have so much depth and throw them away. And it's it's ridiculous.
Exactly that.
Another thing that's ridiculous is we keep getting these, like, weird, just below chest level shots of Barbas that let us see entirely into his mouth. And I do not like it. Not one bit. He has got to start flossing. Like, being an evil demon with an inconsistent backstory is no excuse for poor dental hygiene. I just cannot handle all of these mouth shots.
I mean, okay, you know, he was like a one-episode actor. He probably didn't have dental insurance. Like, this is really, honestly, just an expose on the evils of capitalism and our health insurance in this country.
Honestly, what a statement.
Where even the demon of fear did not have access to proper dental care. What is the world coming to?
Prue shows
up. I'm upset.
I mean, I could go off about health insurance all day long, but that's not what this show is for.
Isn't it just a little? Anyway, go on.
Prue shows up just as this poor woman dies. And this really upsets her because this is the second time in a season she's discovered a freshly dead body and does not want to get blamed for this one. So she just bounces.
Now, I mean, of course, this is going to become a regular occurrence for her being right in front of freshly dead bodies, you know, because she's a murderer. So anyway, so then Prue flits off to Quake, and she regales her tragic and incriminating story to Piper and Phoebe, and then she spills some salt, and Piper is all, "No evil spirits, you gotta throw that over your shoulder," and Prue is like, "We've been attacked by so many evil spirits that had nothing to do with salt, you stupid bitch," and then a waiter immediately spills, like, soup on her, or whatever.
I don't know what it is, but she just immediately gets spilled on.
Yeah.
And then Piper gets asked out on a date by, like, a hunk of burning amateur porn star. But Prue, having stained her outfit, is like, I'm gonna go put myself in danger. Do you do the salt thing? I definitely throw salt over my shoulder when I spill. Are there any, like, superstitions that you do follow or pay attention to?
So I don't do the salt thing because I literally hate salt. And this may be insane. This may be a slight bit of mental illness showing, but I really think that there's so much salt in everything that we eat already anyway that I'm absolutely just disgusted by the idea of adding more. So I literally don't add salt.
That's
to anything.
That's accurate. That is absolutely accurate. But do you use salt in magic ever? Or
no, I hate it. I find salt disgusting. I don't want to see it ever. I hate it.
That's so funny to me.
Most people think it's weird and that I'm mentally ill. My roommate makes fun of me for it all the time.
No, I absolutely understand the mentality about food, not necessarily about the witchcraft, though. I use salt all the time in magic.
I guess I never considered it, but it's actually possible that the fact that salt repels me means that
you're an evil spirit.
I am an evil spirit.
You heard it here first.
There is a superstition that I guess I don't necessarily, like, die hard believe in, but I've had experience with.
Okay.
That I would love to talk about. Once upon a time, I lived in this really fucked up situation. Basically, but a friend of mine and her boyfriend had this trailer, and a bunch of her other friends, including me, were, like, just sort of vagrantly, like, living in and out of that trailer with her.
Oh.
Okay. And there was a lot of, like, drug use and infidelity that went on in this situation. Anyway, and then there was this weird streak of adopting too many cats that happened.
Okay.
Yeah, so this was a fucked up situation. I mean, we, like, spray painted the furniture. We hung fabric from the ceiling. Like, there was a lot going on.
How very bohemian.
We painted the toaster. It was crazy. So this situation was crazy. And at one point, we had 9 in this trailer, which is against just so many codes. Legal, moral. And this one day, literally all of our cats ran away.
Oh, shit.
All of them. And they weren't outdoor cats, so it's not like somebody, like, reported us and they got picked up or something. Like, they were all inside. But they all just, like, got out and ran away.
Wow.
So shortly after that, the whole drug use infidelity thing kind of came to a head. And thankfully, I wasn't involved. However, it was drunk as shit watching my friends beat the shit out of each other, physically, literally, because they were all sleeping with each other.
But not in like a sexually progressive, like, polycule, consensual, like,
no.
Communicative sort of way. It's like...
No, in a behind everyone's back, this is a secret kind of way. Oh. And even though I'm cheating on you, it's not okay for you to be cheating on me kind of way.
Yikes.
Yeah, so it was a fucking mess, is what I'm saying. So anyway, so that was a really long story with a dramatic ending. Just trust me when I tell you that the physical altercation that I witnessed was very dramatic. Part of the reason I went back home and tried to get along with my mom. Later, I don't know how much later, but a bit later, I was thumbing through, I believe it was Ray Buckland's Complete Encyclopedia of Divination.
Ooh.
I think it was that book. Anyway, some book I was reading about divination said that one of the worst possible omens for a bad future is if a cat abandons its home.
Oh my gosh. Whoa.
So anyway.
That's wild.
I found that fascinating.
That was wonderful to include in here.
I thought you'd like that story.
We cut to Phoebe doing her job poorly and not knowing how to toss a coin at all. And she hangs up on a customer because she has a vision of her sister in the shower, which is weird considering Prue gets saved far before she even gets there. The writers probably just wanted to insert more naked shots of Shannon is what I'm thinking.
Or they wanted like 17 reasons for Phoebe to leave and come back to her new job all in one day. Which, by the way, this is exactly the kind of thing you should expect from an employee that you don't properly vet and then leave in charge of the office, is that they're going to hang up on your customers because they're having psychedelic hallucinations and then they're just going to abandon the job.
Barbas is peeping on Prue in the shower and is like, thanks for being stupid and going exactly where I can kill you with almost no effort, you dumb bitch. And the shots...
I mean, that was the dumb bitch move, Prue.
It really was. It was so stupid. But the shots of the shower filling up with water are actually really, really cool. The cinematography of it is neat. But you could really tell that Shannon had to, like, force herself under the water and that she was, like, having to try to keep herself under the surface, and it doesn't look great from like a movement standpoint, but
the shots are all kind of like quick and choppy to sort of disguise that, I think.
Yeah, but absolutely. While I do think that they do a pretty good job balancing the sisters' screen time in this episode, this one and the next one are really Prue-centric.
Because it's season one and everything is about Prue.
Yeah, and I'm getting like tired of it.
It's gonna keep happening.
Until season three.
Ish. Actually, okay, so, I mean, we're ahead of ourselves here, but, you know, the first episode of season two, I think they're actually addressing their own problem, where they, like, everyone thinks everything is about Prue, and then they're like, oh, no, that's not the case.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Thankfully, Andy and Daryl are investigating her again, and they show up, and Barbas bails. Andy and Daryl come upstairs to find Prue in an empty shower, but when she opens the door, water floods onto the floor.
What a mess. Leo is going to have a heyday re-culking that shower. So Prue lies to the cops, like usual, and rags on Andy's shoes, and it's kind of funny. Phoebe gets there way too late to do anything, but, like, whatever, it's fine. So the popo leave, and then Prue takes the towel off her hair, and she has this full-on rogue white streak in her hair, which looks, like, so fake and bad.
Yeah. Better head to Walgreens and get some L'Oreal Jet Black.
Honestly. However, the gray streak is immediately less pronounced in the next scene just from her, like, walking upstairs. And then it disappears for the rest of the episode, even though she couldn't possibly have dyed her hair without putting herself in the exact same danger again. But whatever.
Prue and Phoebe head up to the attic to check the book again. And Prue smells her mother's fragrance, and on the page their mother had written on has another passage added. Prue says she can feel her mother's presence. This is actually a really common phenomenon when it comes to the spirits of departed loved ones. It actually reminded me of an experience I had recently where I was going to clear out my grandpa's house and like clean up and get some things because he passed away recently. And I felt every single member of my family in that house when we went there. I've had like these really bizarre, super intense mediumship experiences recently, and it started with that moment. I've had like little paranormal slash like spirit contact experiences sporadically since I've been practicing, but ever since that happened, ever since I went back into that space and had that moment, I have been connecting with the spirit world all the time. And it oftentimes feels a lot like what's going on in this scene. Scenes like this one and the one that we see later make me really emotional just in general. The whole dead parents thing really gets me. Having lost my own parents, I can definitely say that I have experienced exactly this before.
At Quake, Piper is now having a bad day, which she attributes to the fact that she accepted a date with that, like, Falcon Studios guy. Doug, the underconfident, overconfident loser who is now engaged, is back in the role of Captain Obvious, defending the known.
he's like, well, it is Friday the 13th. Fucking duh, Doug.
He's like, really? Thanks, Doug. I didn't fucking notice. I'm only freaking out about it constantly, Doug!
Piper sets off a smoke detector with a sage stick. I have done this so many times. I've done that so many times.
So I think Piper in this scene is a perfect example of using superstition to create your own problems. She's freaking out about Friday the 13th, even though it's just like normal stuff that's happening to her, like a ripped skirt because she bent over improperly and is wearing a skirt that's too tight for her, for example. And like, you know, employees being unreliable. Well, that's just work, sweetheart. That's just what it's like being a manager, okay? So she goes into the kitchen, and right under a smoke detector, she lights a sage stick off of a stove burner where she totally could have burnt her hand. And then when the smoke detector predictively goes off, she plunges her hand into a pot of boiling water that she knew was boiling because she lit her stage stick from the fire that was directly under it. And then she's like, oh, fucking Friday the 13th.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like
or Piper, or you're a stupid bitch. Maybe.
I feel like all of the sisters are kind of dumb in this episode. They're doing dumb stuff. But
anyway, the point is that you can be so worried about a superstition or an omen of something bad happening that you do something silly that makes something bad happen. And is that on the omen or is that on you?
Food for thought. Back at Phoebe's new blip on her resume, she can't lie about her boss being a hoe. Susan. Oh, her name is Susan.
Susan. That's it. I'm telling you, white lady with bangs. You know?
Honestly, the man playing Susan's husband shows up and is not a very good actor.
Unless he's portraying like every white male baby boomer customer I've ever met with their lame jokes and being impotently cuckolded all the time. Because he is just like that. Let me tell you.
Anyway, she is honest with him and he's like, oh, fuck, my wife's a slut. And that's the end of that interaction. And Phoebe is quitting her job. Surprise, surprise. Yeah.
She's like, I'm going to quit. JK lol, phone's ringing.
She gets a call about a showing as she's literally about to quit and agrees to go there, even though there's no way she has any information about the listing or any knowledge of real estate at all.
Ah, the confidence of a 20-year-old. I vaguely remember. Do you know what else she doesn't have, Phoenix?
What?
A car.
I didn't even think about that. She does not.
Yeah.
She doesn't have a car or her own fucking clothes. Like, mm-hmm. Why would she go to show a house on her first day, especially when she's about to quit? Yeah. She does it anyway and gets herself in fucking trouble, as per usual. But Alyssa Milano is acting her fucking ass off in this episode.
Yeah, she is. Well, I think, serious for a second. That's kind of the beauty of these three actresses, is, and that's why we like the show, is because even when things get ridiculous, Shannon and Holly and Alyssa and later Rose, they all know how to sell it.
Yeah.
And that's just what it is.
Absolutely. Piper blows her date with this Sean Coney wannabe, but he wants kids, so that's the bullet dodge, in my opinion, to be honest.
I'm gonna have to be on the side of the bait bus guy here, because, like, I love astrology and crystals and witchcraft and tarot and everything, but I find it so annoying when people use these things as excuses for why they can't do things, why they can't change, why everything is doomed. It's so annoying. Witchcraft is about liberation. Don't use it for self-sabotage. If you're doing that, you're doing it wrong. I know we're not supposed to say that, like, other witches are doing things wrong, but if you're using witchcraft or mysticism or the occult to make your life harder, I'm sorry, honey, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Or you're doing it weird.
You're doing it in a way that is not its, like, purpose.
You're doing something that is strange.
It's counterintuitive. You want to have intuition, listen to it, bitch. In the climax of the episode, Prue goes to pick Phoebe up from the house she should not have gone to, and is ambushed by Barbas, who pushes her into a pool and is going to force Phoebe to watch her die. Shannon Doherty, like, tries her best to struggle underwater, and Patty, their mother, whose face we do not see, appears in the water to save her and says,
Prue, you must face your fears, Prue. You must trust in the greatest of all powers, love. Save yourself. Save your sister. Don't be afraid.
I mean, thank God that they didn't, like, cast someone to actually be the face of their mother in this episode, because, I mean, I think Finola Hughes, who they later cast, is outstanding.
Yeah.
And clearly this is not her doing the voice of their mother in this episode.
I totally agree. I think it was a good choice. And honestly, like, for the way that, like, spirit work works, sometimes it's kind of accurate. They don't always appear as, like, exactly what you think of them as.
So she's all inspired by her dead mom, and Prue rises to the surface of the pool. There's this shot of Barbas grabbing Phoebe and I felt like he was trying to hold her and force her to watch Prue die.
Oh, okay.
Like, that was what was going on there. It is weird, though, because this is the only time he actually, like, touches one of his victims, and it does seem weird, especially since he had her, like, all tied up and shit.
Yeah, it's weird that he's, like, got his hands on her. I mean, no, I know he's a demon and a bad guy or whatever, but, like, he didn't do that with anybody else.
And, well, it just seems kind of weird, because by the mythology of this episode, like, people are paralyzed by their greatest fear, and he's forcing Phoebe to live her greatest fear, watching Prue die, so she shouldn't be able to move anyway, just like none of the other people could move, but he's holding her anyway. I don't know, maybe it's just like a weird blocking issue.
Phoebe was sort of like off to the side there, so I think maybe it makes sense with that idea that he would have moved her and picked her up if she couldn't move herself. But yeah, as you said, Prue comes to the surface. And as soon as Barbas realizes he doesn't have control over the women anymore, he throws a tantrum and explodes. Typical man.
Seriously. Ugh, what do you want to bet Barbas is a Republican?
Honestly. Fucking, he's going to show up in the next episode and be all MAGA.
Yeah, and he's going to be, like, on a panel discussing women's reproductive rights on C-SPAN.
Phoebe's binds and gag disappear in this Disney Plus ass effect. Like, she is Cinderella going to the goddamn ball.
I literally did not think of it that way, but you were spot on. That's exactly what it looks like. Oh, shit.
She rushes over to hug Prue and says, I was so scared. I don't know what I would do if I lost you. Spoiler alert, Phoebes. You're going to find out in about 2 years.
You are so cunty today. I love it. So the girls go home to find Piper being absolutely no help at all. And they fill her in on what happened. And she's like, wow, well, you guys were in mortal peril. I was literally, like, on a date. but then, you know, because Prue has learned not to be afraid of love, she tells her sisters that she loves them for the first time. It is actually very sweet, like, in being, like,
yeah,
sort of, like, flippant here. But
it's really sincere and cute, yes. It's a beautiful moment.
But so this is not the last episode where Piper will be entirely out of the action, leaving Prue and, you know, sort of kind of Phoebe to deal with the demon all on their own. Like, did the writers just have no respect for how cool Piper's power actually is? Or, like,
I don't know.
It's weird.
I'm going to mention this again, but I feel like, so there's, do you mean just this season or in general?
It might just be this season. I'm not 100% sure.
Because there are a few more episodes where Piper is just like really busy with a work thing. And I think it's possible that Holly Marie Combs might have had something going on and like needed time off of work. Because there are a few more episodes coming up where she's kind of doing her own thing. And it seems...
Yeah, I don't know. Well, so the next one makes more sense because it's about Prue and Phoebe's relationship without Piper there to help them. Mm-hmm. And so that one makes sense. It doesn't really make sense in this one for her to be completely out of the action because she still had a story going on. It just had nothing to do with anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what? I take that back. Because I love Piper's story in this episode because it talks about exactly how I feel about superstitions and using occultism for self-sabotage. So I actually think it's a very valuable story that Piper is telling here. But normally they can do that sort of thing and still include all the sisters in the climax. But for some reason that doesn't happen in this one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've not seen these writers' names before, so it could just be they aren't used to writing ensemble shows.
Perhaps.
But that's a totally valid point. Normally, it's really easy for them to have their own things and then all come together at the end. The final scene is Prue in the attic looking at the page their mother wrote, and it's magically added to in front of her eyes. We fade out with some sentimental music. It's a really touching end to a really fantastic episode. We made fun of a lot of stuff in this episode because that's just what we do.
Because that's who we are.
That is who we are.
We're the Witch Bitches review, not the Witch Friends review.
Okay. This ain't Witch Bitches Best Friends race.
Yeah, this ain't Witch Bitches Best Friends. Shut up.
Yeah, no, this is a beautiful episode. It really is. It's for all of its issues, for all of its funny stuff, I think it's really, really great. Do you have any final thoughts on this one, Siren?
My final thought is just to reiterate that I hate that this episode begins the series-long tradition of treating other witches like garbage. And, I mean, in a lot of cases, they're actually, like, mocking their own viewers who actually are witches.
No, it definitely feels that way.
Kind of problematic. I mean, it's not going to make me, like, stop, like, loving the show and rewatching it and doing a podcast on it or whatever. But,
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And it's something that we should talk about and bring attention to.
For sure.
So we experienced not as many deaths as you would expect. I mean, clearly he didn't get 13 in this episode.
Well, it was implied that, like, a bunch of other women died off screen.
True. My kill of the day, I think, is actually going to be Doug, because we never see him again, and I'm just going to assume he was so straight and boring that he died.
Bye.
Bye.
He's like the low-budget Nick Carter, you know?
Yes, he went off to do bait bus. That's what happened.
Probably. My kill of the day is actually Zoe. And yes, I'm being actually serious with this one. Zoe's death scene is dramatic and horrifying. And obviously, I don't want to die a horrible, painful death. But if I have to, there's just something enticing about that whole, like, burning witches thing that appeals to my dark side. If I'm going to go, I want to go out in a literal blaze of glory looking pissed off. All right. My other kill of the day is any future career I could possibly have had in politics now that there's a soundbite of me talking about licking feet on the internet.
I mean, there's a demographic for it, I'm sure.
Quite a large one, if I understand correctly.
Kill of the day.
Next up, Siren on OnlyFans.
If I were gonna rate this one, I think I would give it however many fucking times they say Friday the 13th in this episode, because it's a lot.
If I were gonna rate this episode, I would rate it an extremely high number. Something about as high as the bill from Barbas's dentist once he finally gets into that office visit, because you know he ain't got no insurance.
All right, Siren, where can the people find you?
Oh my gosh, you can totally follow me on my Facebook meme page. I am Siren Spectacular, non-binary meme witch. Or you can follow me on Twitter at Siren Spectacular. And of course, you can look forward to my new feet-looking OnlyFans. I mean, I'm sorry, you can follow my coven's YouTube channel, Millennial Incantation.
You can follow me on Instagram at Phoenix Arcana Lightwood. You can follow me on Twitter at Phoenix Arcana _. You can follow the podcast at WBRcast across the board. If you have a question or something you'd like to hear us talk about, please send us an email at whichbereview@gmail.com. Like and review us on Apple Podcasts. Do all of the things that you normally do for your favorite shows, because now we're your favorite show and you don't have a choice.
You betcha. All right, you pathetic, non-magical witch practitioner losers.
Until next time, keep on witching.
And bitching.
Bye. Bye.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?